Welcome to 5. We're discussing the logical problem of evil as it has been at least a number of years ago. In 1955, it was resuscitated by J.L. Mackey, a British atheistic philosopher, in the British journal Mind. We're discussing what it means for two statements to be logically inconsistent. Inconsistency is, of course, a logical concept, and the way we're describing it makes use of the notion of possible worlds, which we have described on Lecture 1 and Lecture 3. The idea of a logically possible world is that within that world, all things are mutually possible, in the sense that if one thing is true and another thing is true in a possible world, that entails that those two things are logically possible in that world. That they're logically, not only are they logically possible in that world because they're actual, anything that's actual in a world is possible in that world, of course, but it entails the further thing, the further fact, logical fact, that those two statements are, in fact, consistent. They can live together in a world. Okay? Question becomes, when are things really logically inconsistent? Mackey makes this claim, but in fact, it's going to be shown to be false by Alvin Plantinga in his free will defense. But before Plantinga and others came along from the Christian camp, Mackey really thought that if God was all-powerful and God was all-good, that there would be no evil whatsoever in the world, but there is evil. Therefore, it's impossible that God exists in this world. Okay, do you see? If we say that it's impossible that God and evil cohabit a world, if evil is in that world, then God cannot be in that world. Not only is he not, but it's logically impossible that he be in that world. That's what Mackey thinks, and in fact, he never showed that to be the case. That is, I submit, Mackey never showed the two statements, God exists, and we understand within that, God is omnipotent and God is all good. God exists and evil exists are explicitly inconsistent. He never shows that. And in fact, what Plantinga has done in the 60s, 70s, 1980s is to show that in fact God exists and evil exists are explicitly consistent. So Plantinga not only rebuts Mackey's point, but he seconds him by showing him that in fact God and evil are consistent, and he shows it in a very patent way. Clear way. And we'll cover that, Lord willing. So the task left for Mackey is to show that God exists and evil exists, those two statements, are explicitly inconsistent. Now, how do you show that? When you just look at the two statements, God exists, evil exists, there you may see some sort of tension between them, which even the Christian can admit, but there's not any sort of written right on its sleeve inconsistency between the two statements, logical inconsistency. Because remember, all you have to do to show that two things are logically consistent is to show that it's possible. It is possible that they could exist together in a possible world. That world need not be this world. The statement that all of my fingers are longer than 4 inches long, and that I'm a concert pianist. Those two statements are consistent. They are both false in this world, but they are in fact consistent. That is, they could both be true in a possible world. Okay, you see what we're up to when we talk about consistency. If you want to show two things are explicitly logically inconsistent, you've got to have statements like this, as our example was. John is over 6 feet tall. It is not the case that John is over 6 feet tall. Those two are explicitly inconsistent, because the only difference between the two statements is the word not, or it is not the case that. But when you look at Mackey's case that God exists and evil exists, those two statements are inconsistent. There's a lot going on there. It's not just the mere difference between one statement, say A, and second statement, not A. Those are explicitly inconsistent. So Mackey must be saying that God exists and the statement evil exists, that those two statements are implicitly inconsistent. Well, how do you show that things that are implicitly inconsistent are explicitly inconsistent? Well, two statements, I submit, are implicitly inconsistent, provided there is a necessarily true statement, such that from the conjunction of it and the two statements, we can logically deduce two statements that are explicitly inconsistent. Okay, now here's an example. John is over 6 feet tall. And the second statement, John is under 6 feet tall. Now, as you can see from my first and second statement, John is over 6 feet tall, John is under 6 feet tall, those two are not explicitly inconsistent. The one statement is not the mere negation of the other. What we need is a necessarily true statement, such that from the conjunction of it and the two statements involved here about John, we can logically deduce two statements that are explicitly inconsistent. So here's the statement we need. Statement 3. Necessarily, if someone is less than 6 feet tall, then that person is not over 6 feet tall. Therefore, from statements 2 and 3, we can logically deduce a statement, namely, John is not over 6 feet tall. That is explicitly inconsistent with our first statement that John is over 6 feet tall. And thus, in that manner, we could show two statements that were implicitly inconsistent to be definitely, and we could know that they are inconsistent. So, another example. This ball is blue. This ball is not colored. Okay? Now, those two statements are not the mere negation of each other. They're not explicitly inconsistent. And yet, if the ball is blue, it's not true, is it, that it is colored? In fact, in any possible world in which it is blue, it's also true that it is colored. So those are explicitly inconsistent. And we can produce this necessarily true statement, namely this. Necessarily, whatever is red is colored. I'm sorry. Necessarily, whatever is blue, blue is our chosen color here. Necessarily, whatever is blue is colored. And we said that this ball is blue, and therefore what follows is that this ball is colored. And we therefore produce an explicitly inconsistent pair. In the original example, statement 2, this ball is not colored, and our produced or deduced statement, this ball is colored. And therefore, you can show in that manner that two implicitly inconsistent statements are, in fact, inconsistent. You can show and know that they are inconsistent. So what Mackey has to do then is, if he wants to show that one, evil exists, and two, God exists, are logically inconsistent, he has to find a third statement such that this third statement is A, necessarily true, and B, is such that from statement 1, evil exists, and statement 2, God exists, and our third statement, it can be logically deduced, or we can logically deduce two statements that are explicitly inconsistent. That's what Mackey needs to do. It's a challenge to him. And in his article, famous article, Omnipotence, Evil and Omnipotence, he fails to do this. Here's some failed efforts, and I think it's instructive to show. Okay, Mackey's going to try to produce that third statement, which is necessarily true, and it's such that when conjoined with statement one, God exists, or evil exists, and two, God exists, we can logically deduce two statements that are explicitly inconsistent. Now, here are some tried and failed efforts. Here's failed effort number one. Conjoin this statement with one, evil exists, and two, God exists. Here's three. An omnipotent, perfect being would prevent the existence of any evil, whatever. Now, three here that I've just read does satisfy criterion B. That is, from it and the statement God exists, we can crank out the deduction that no evil exists. And that would be explicitly inconsistent with our first premise, premise one, that evil exists. However, we don't know that three is necessarily true. We don't know that it satisfies criterion A. For suppose, as I've said, if some particular evil is logically necessary for some greater good, and a world with that greater good is better than any world without it, then three would not be true, that statement that we produced. And therefore, it's an effort, but it's a failed effort. It does not fit the bill for what is needed in this case. Mackey fails if he produces that effort. Now consider 3 prime. This is the second effort which fails. An omnipotent, perfect being would prevent any evil not necessary for a greater good. Now, in this example, we have it switched around. We need to find the third statement, which when conjoined with 1, evil exists, and 2, God exists, is A, necessarily true, and B, is such that from 1 and 2, and it, we can logically deduce two statements that are explicitly inconsistent. But 3 prime fails as well. An omnipotent perfect being would prevent any evil not necessary for a greater good. Perhaps it does satisfy statement A, criterion A. That is, perhaps that's necessarily true, that an omnipotent perfect being would prevent any evil not necessary for a greater good. But by combining 3 prime and statement 1 and statement 2, you cannot then deduce two statements that are explicitly inconsistent. Because if you combine God exists and 3 prime, an omnipotent perfect being would prevent any evil not necessary for a greater good, it could well be that evil would exist in that state of affairs. And therefore, the statement we just produced, namely that evil would exist in that state of affairs, would be in fact consistent with statement 1, that evil exists. So there would be no inconsistency shown. And so people like Mackey are left with a dilemma. When we find a statement that we know satisfies criterion A, that is, that it's necessarily true, some statement that's necessarily true, when you combine it with 1, evil exists, and 2, God exists, it doesn't satisfy criterion B. That is, you can't crank out from 1, 2, and the statement you produce, two statements that are explicitly inconsistent. When we find a statement that satisfies B, that is, you can, with that statement and statement 1 and 2, evil exists and God exists, you can crank out explicitly inconsistent a pair of explicitly inconsistent propositions, we don't know that that statement is necessarily true. And so, we haven't shown, Mackey has not shown, that God exists and evil exists are in fact explicitly logically inconsistent. In fact, they are not logically inconsistent. And what Plantinga does in a number of his articles, over the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, is to show, in fact, that God exists and evil exists are consistent. He actually shows that using the free will defense. As I said, Plantinga is going to respond to Mackey using the free will defense. It is, of course, a common turn. It is a common response by the Christian to refer to the human free-willed agent that God wanted to create. He wanted humans to be free, and then accidentally, or as it would go, humans misused their freedom, and that's how sin entered the world. Christians use that defense, or theodicy. It's more of a defense, I think, but at any rate, Christians use that response very frequently. It's important to think deeply about what we mean when we say these sorts of things. And what Mackey does is he tries to respond to that very claim that the Christian makes. Here's the main part of his response. Mackey says, look, God is omnipotent. That means he can instantiate, he can create any possible world that he wants. Okay, like we said, there are many different possible worlds. Some presumably are better than others in overall value. God would know which world, if one of them was best, which world was the best possible world. Being omnipotent, he would know the world, and being omnipotent, he could create that world. At least this is what someone like Mackey claims. Plantinga tries to show that that's not the case, and we'll look at that in a moment. But Mackey's claim is that there's a best possible world, God would know that world, and being omnipotent, he would create it if he existed. But since the world that we live in obviously isn't the best world, therefore, God does not exist. So it goes, one of Mackey's argument goes something like this. One, free will is seen to be valuable by Christian. God wants us, if he exists, Mackey would say, if God existed, God would want us to freely love him, rather than to serve him as mere automatons, mere puppets. Okay, good enough. But Mackey says this, look, secondly, consider this argument. Premise A, it's possible that on one occasion, a free human agent does what is right and does it freely. Okay, that's certainly possible. And so, premise B, it's possible that on all occasions a free human agent does what is right freely. And so Mackey concludes, look, therefore it's possible that on all occasions all free human agents do what is right freely. And then Mackey says, why didn't God avail himself of this possibility? If that's a possible world in which all free human agents do what is right and do it freely, and God can create just any old possible world he wants, why didn't God choose that one? In the words of Mackey, why didn't God avail himself of that possibility? Once again, Mackey seems to assume that the best possible world is a world with no evil. Sound familiar? It should. It's Hume's assumption again, that the best human life is the one that minimizes pain and maximizes pleasure. Since God's all-powerful, he would create a world in which there was a minimal amount of pain, in fact, no pain, as we've seen in the writing of Hume. This is an interesting argument by Mackey, that if a human being is free on one occasion and does something that's good and does it freely, then certainly it's possible that on all occasion that person could do what is right freely. And therefore, it's possible that there's some set of human individuals that God could have created in a possible world such that on all occasions those free human agents would do what is right and do so freely. Plantinga will respond to Mackey in this ingenious argument, which I believe fails, but it is an ingenious argument. Another part of Mackey's article, which is interesting, is his treatment of divine omnipotence, and thus the title, Evil and Omnipotence. there has been, of course, traditional paradoxes which are designed to show that God's omnipotence is, in fact, impossible. It couldn't be had by any creature. No one can have omnipotent power in that way. And you remember the old paradoxes, like, is God strong enough to lift the heaviest rock that he can create? Or, in other words, can God create a rock so heavy that he himself cannot lift it? Well, this is, of course, a traditional paradox. I believe that George Mavrodis, former professor at University of Michigan, has done a very good job. And I leave that to you to search the literature if you're interested in that issue. But Mavrodis has done a very good job in rebutting, in taking care of, in deflecting this sort of supposed paradox of omnipotence. At any rate, Mackey believes that the paradox of omnipotence is still in full force. He says, for example, that isn't there something incoherent in the notion of omnipotence? How could a being like God create a being that he cannot control? Right? If humans are free, they can't have been created by God, is more or less his argument. But humans are free, therefore they weren't created by God. In other words, God is all-controlling. That's part of being all-powerful, Mackey thinks. But human beings are free. They have a creative font within them. They're able to initiate new action and bring about action that wouldn't have come about in the world had they not thought and designed and intended to do that action. Now, this comes back to the way in which we defined omnipotence on an earlier lecture. We said that omnipotence is the idea, when a being has omnipotence, that being can do all things that are able to be done. All things that are able to be done. So, consider this. If God created the laws of nature and the laws of logic, okay, many Christians hold this view that God created the laws of nature and the laws of logic. We'll come back to that in a second. But if that's the case, if he created those things, then they cannot bind him. And so Mackey concludes, why then do Christians say that God cannot do the logically impossible? God created those laws of logic, then he should be able to supersede them. Okay, now the theistic answer to this is that God did not create the laws of logic in the same way that he created the laws of nature, or he created you and me. For the laws of logic are rooted in God's nature of thinking. Since God is eternal, his manner of thinking is also eternal and also uncreated. Okay, the laws of logic are rooted in God's nature of thinking. There was no time before which the laws of logic did not exist. They've always existed because they're manifested in the way in which God thinks. Okay, if P, then Q, P, therefore Q. Modus ponens, a very popular and universal logical law. Well, that law is just the case because God thinks that way, and he expects us to think and reason correctly after God, as it were, to think God's thoughts after him. But consider the laws of nature. The laws of nature are created, and as we've said, if God so wills on an occasion, he does and can supersede those laws. Theists call these supersessions miracles. When God supersedes or supervenes upon the laws of nature and does something outside or beyond or above those laws. For example, when Jesus walked on the water or changed the water to wine. On a later tape, I will try to state reasons for why God put into place, for all we know why, that is, God put humans in a stable environment. We have to come to know what to expect by our actions in order to mature as moral agents. Okay, we've talked about, and these are reasons we'll develop more, about why God has stable, general laws of nature. In short, for the world to have moral value, and for the world to exhibit scientific regularity, we have to have a basis of expectation. When someone tells us a promise, we know what it takes. We know the way the world must go in order for that promise to be fulfilled. When someone says he's going to jump on a trampoline, we have a basis of expectation because we're used to the law of gravity and we know what will happen. In a world where the laws of morality and the laws of physics were every which way but loose, we would have no basis for expectation. There would be no possibility of science, no possibility of morality. That's not the sort of world that God would create and would stand beside as his creation. So it seems to me that Mackey's thoughts about omnipotence can be deflected and answered successfully by the Christian in these ways that I've trotted out here. We turn now to Alvin Plantinga's work on the logical problem of evil and how he rebuts that problem. Plantinga has written many articles beginning in the mid-60s and going through the 70s and 80s with respect to evil, and he's done an excellent job for the theistic camp. What Plantinga designs to show, is that the statement God is omnipotent, omniscient, and wholly good, and secondly, there is evil in the world, are in fact not inconsistent, that in fact they are consistent with one another. All you need to do is show that there is a possible world in which those two statements, God's omnipotent, omniscient, and wholly good, and two, there is evil in the world, are in fact both true.